Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Your home for Titans football and the University of Tennessee Volunteers. 1045, The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We are with Blake Bedingfield, former Titans scout for 19 years. Now you can read his work at paulkoharski.com and hear him weekly right here on 104.5 The Zone. Nice enough to join us on this Thursday. He'll be with us through the rest of the show, but this hour focused primarily and really strictly on the matchup between the Titans and Colts. We'll branch off and get into a variety of other topics as Blake will join the show as a co-host of sorts from 1 until 2 p.m. You can join Blake right now to talk Titans and Colts at 615-737-1045. 615-737-1045 if you'd like to jump in. Blake, Andrew Luck, I don't know how many times I'm going to say it this week. Over-under was probably like 30, and I've probably already crushed that number if you took those bets of the 10-0 record that the Colts and Luck have over the Titans when he's a starter. What's it like being in a situation where a player just has your number? Do you buy into that?
You know, I do. I saw it firsthand with Peyton Manning here for a number of years, just waiting for Peyton to retire or move on. But it's tough. An organization or a team, whether it's Andrew Luck, who has had moving parts within the personnel groupings of the Colts, it's been a stable of Luck and what he can do to a defense, and that can be a defense of 4 or 5 years ago or a defense of today. He is that special of a quarterback, and when you play him in your division and you play him twice a year, it makes it tough. And yeah, it gets into your head a little bit, but it also can motivate a defense to put the stops to that. At some point, that winning streak has to come to an end.
I remember with Peyton, there was a special defense for Peyton Manning and the Colts. Does Luck require the same commitment defensively?
It does. Now, Luck is a better athlete than Peyton was, and part of that defense required Albert Haynesworth and Kyle VandenBosch putting pressure around the legs of Peyton Manning. And what I mean by that is Kyle VandenBosch was a high intense effort pass rusher, and he always seemed to go low on the quarterback, whether it was by chance or by on purpose. You know, and one of the things Peyton didn't do is he didn't like players around his feet. He didn't have great feet to move in the first place, but he didn't want people falling. Albert Haynesworth seemed to get jacked up for games like the Colts, and he and VandenBosch were a tough duo, and putting that pressure on Peyton, what ended up happening with Jim Schwartz kind of came up with a defense, but playing back, playing a soft zone, allowing passes underneath, and getting off the field, whether it was giving up one first down, but 5-6 plays later, you're getting off the field and making them punt. You knew they were going to score some points, but trying to limit the points on the board.
I remember also Bullock telling me the story of just how precise defensively they had to be against Manning, because with Peyton, he was great at reading the depth of linebackers. That's how he would determine where he's going with the football and coverages. And you would have to disguise the depth as much as you would the coverage against him. Can you notice the same things with Luck?
Oh, no question about it. No question. And the one thing with Peyton's personnel they had the Dallas Clark, the tight end, the Ederton James, the running back, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison. You're talking about elite-level players, whether they were on the Colts or other teams. They were all drafted in the first round. Those were very talented group of offensive players. So, you know, he had people and personnel that could make plays after the catch or after the run. But, you know, Andrew doesn't have that luxury to have that many players. They're building on it with Eric Ebron this year, and they have Jack Doyle, the running back Marlon Mack's a nice piece to the puzzle, and obviously T.Y. Hilton, who is an excellent player.
Well, and they got Costanzo back at tackle. That's the same time that Mack returned to the lineup, and they've been running the ball well since then. I'm not saying it's all because of the tackle, but that line gelled, and they've established the run with Marlon Mack, and that has kept them balanced as they've won 8 of their last 9 games.
You know, they have, and they have a nice duo with Hines, the rookie receiving running back for them. He's more than third down back.
Throw to him.
He's got excellent hands, excellent receiving ability, and really outstanding top end speed. And he's one of those players that you can't just match up with a linebacker. The Colts put him in positions to match up with linebackers, and he's going to run away from them. That's going to be something that Jayon Brown, if he's in that position, you want him on Hines. But Marlon Mack's a good in-between-the-tackle runner. He has very good straight-ahead speed. He's not really a power runner, even though he's built very well. He will go down on good contact. So, you know, he can be stopped, but they have other options now with Hines out of the backfield.
What's the mistake that Luck is most likely to make?
You know, in the first game, you didn't see really any passes to Eric Ebron. They used Jack Doyle a number of times. I thought Ebron would be more of a player in that game, but T.Y. Hilton was obviously the matchup for the Colts in that game, whether it was the deep passes that beat Adoree on one, and Adoree committed a pass interference, a deep long pass interference on another.
Probably a smart one, though.
Right.
To his credit, it was going to be a touchdown.
Yeah, it was. And they went right back to the same play that they beat him on the first time. So, you know, those are smart things for the Colts to do. But in this game, I expect a little bit more of an Eric Ebron game. And that's where the Titans can take advantage. The Titans have done an outstanding job really designing their blitz attack and really kind of taking away a little bit of what the offensive line like to do. They blitz corners off the edge. They blitz the linebackers. A little bit different without Logan Ryan as a corner. LaShawn Sims was not as effective on the nickel blitz as Logan Ryan was. Logan Ryan just had that timing playing all year, but he has a little bit more of the initial quickness that LaShawn Sims lacks. LaShawn is a better outside corner than he is inside nickel player. But, you know, when you start to design those blitzes like Dean Pease likes to do, those linebackers will fake like they're going to blitz up the middle and then back off into coverage. And if they're going to beat an Andrew Luck, they can rob passes at times in the middle of the field if they're going to try to hit an Eric Ebron or Jack Doyle. And they have enough of the athleticism at the linebacker position, whether it's Rashawn Evans, Jayon Brown, and Wesley Woodard, to make Andrew make that mistake.
So the nickel blitz could give him problems if he decides to throw up the middle off of that?
No question.
Okay.
No question about it. I see something happen in the middle of the field, whether it's, you know, a pass that Andrew Luck thinks is there and is taken away by a design blitz that ended up backing out of it in the middle of the field.
Blake, Mariota, we don't know his practice status yet. It looked like he had some cleats in his hand, so that's at least a good sign that maybe he could at least be limited in practice today. But how do you accommodate what Marcus can bring this offense and get the most out of him if, in fact, he is limited with what he can do with feeling in his hand? We don't know his status, but let's just assume for a moment that he can't do everything well in this game on Sunday night. How can they still get the most out of what he does best?
Use his legs and use Derrick Henry. This is a game where Indianapolis has had success stopping the run versus good running backs. You are a running team right now. That's what they have had success doing. They've used Derrick Henry. This is what they're going to have to do in this game. Whether it's you're putting two tight ends in and you are using the read option play, and Marcus is going to have to use his legs. His legs are fine. He did have a little bit of a limp in the last game. I know he's had a little bit of an ankle, but, you know, this is something that if he's playing in this game and his elbow is still an issue or the grip of the ball in this kind of weather, he's going to have to use his legs along with the running game of Derrick Henry. This is something they can use, though, with Taywan Taylor, Cameron Batts in the short passing game, those quick screens, the reverses. You're going to need to get this defensive line and their front seven off balance. And they didn't do that in the first game.
No.
And they're going to have to do that in this game. This is going to be a little bit of a throw everything at the wall type game.
In the first game, though, it looked like they were trying to establish Deion Lewis primarily over Derrick Henry. Now, the game got away from them, and I think so did their overall game plan when they had to try to play catch up against the scoreboard 17-0 quickly. But and I think Lewis only ended up with 3 more carries than Henry, but it looked like Lewis was the focus of the run game. That's been flipped since week 11. So can that change how you attack Indianapolis?
You know, it can. And because they didn't use Henry enough in that first game, you know, you could see the Colts, they designed their run defense against Lewis. And Lewis was, at that time, really being effective as a cutback runner. They were taking away the cutback lanes in that first game. Now, they are a slanting and pinching type team anyway. They are fast. They're a fast flow defense. Darius Leonard on the inside will clean up a lot of the mistakes that the defensive line makes. But that's going to play against the Titans a little bit. Their interior three offensive linemen do not handle the speed and quickness of that slanting type defensive line. Now, they don't have the dynamic playmakers that they've played against on the defensive line like Washington had. Washington had four really good defensive linemen that they were playing against on a down in and down out basis. But the Colts do play very sound defense, and they are quick to the ball. So with Lewis and his cutback, he was very ineffective in that game. And when Derek came in, he had more success. But this is going to be this is a different offensive line, too. They're coming off the ball a little bit more. They're playing more of a power game. They're running those inside zone runs. And they're going to have to establish that run game to have success.
Indianapolis, linebacker-wise, they are better at overall tackling, better in space than, say, what the Titans just faced against Washington. How do you think they match up, the Titans match up now against Indy compared to what we saw in Week 11? You said they're better up front, they're more aggressive, more physical. Anything you can point to directly that says they'll be better against Indy in matchup number two?
It looks like the Titans' offensive run game is simpler. And what I mean by that is it's more simplified in the way they get a hat on a hat. They're not leaving players unblocked on the backside. They're picking up those backside runners, whether it's a defensive end or an outside linebacker. They're getting a hat on a hat in front. It's more of a, it's still a zone blocking scheme, but it has some man looks as well, where they're not letting anybody run free. There's not a lot of guessing. You will see that at times, whether it's a mistake in this pass game. You saw a mistake where Quentin Spain passed off a player to Ben Jones, and Ben didn't pick him up, and it resulted in a loss. So there's still some of that because of the zone blocking scheme, but more right now, it's getting downhill and allowing Derek to get his shoulder square to the line of scrimmage and take advantage of his size and power.
You know, we had Coach Mack on earlier, and I think it's easy for me to say, oh, the Colts stunt a lot up front, and they do. They gave the Titans O-line fits back in November 18th. How do you think they'll do in matchup number two against that? Have they faced another defensive line since that game that would give you optimism for the matchup on Sunday night?
You know, the Jets were a little bit similar to what the Colts, a little bit different front in terms of a three-man front to a four, but the Jets were trying to get on the move and trying to take away that run game. But, you know, what you're looking at here is I thought the Colts schemed the Titans very well in the first game. And what I mean is anytime the receiver went in a reverse, it was Cameron Batson in that game, anytime he went into a reverse, whether they faked the reverse or not, the backside corner would leave his receiver and actually use that from the backside. He would take away the cutback lanes of Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. So they were really pinching and slanting to take away the run game in the first meeting of the Colts and Titans. So, and I expect a lot of that in this game as well. They're going to be designed to take away Derrick Henry and make Marcus throw the ball downfield. Can they do that? You know, this is a zone coverage type defense, keeping their eyes toward the quarterback, and they ended up with two picks in that first matchup.
It's not a complicated defense.
No, it's not. They use their talent. And Darius Leonard has made a huge impact on that defense.
He has 153 tackles. That leads the league. And to give perspective on that, he's a full game ahead, if not two games ahead, of the next guy in line when it comes to tackles. A full 23 tackles ahead of number two in the league. He gets after it.
And he's
not a Pro Bowler either.
No, which is amazing. I don't understand that whole the Pro Bowl voting on a lot of players. But, you know, when you look at a player that has as many sacks and interceptions and tackles that he's had in his rookie year, he goes unblocked on a lot of plays. He's hard to get a hat on. He's hard for a center or guard to combo block and get to that next level. He's such a fast mover, kind of comparing to the Titans player of years ago, of Keith Bullock. And Keith was a slip and move around type take on linebacker, and Darius is the same, but athletic enough to slip a block and still get back into the play, and that's why those players are so effective in so many different areas.
Likely not in the Pro Bowl for two reasons. Number one, 4-3 defense. Tackles don't make headlines. Sacks do. Interceptions do. And he's done both, but tackles normally don't make headlines. And he plays in the AFC South, which normally is not a national televised game, right? I mean, that was what Bullock would tell you whenever he wasn't making Pro Bowls.
Right.
So it's like, hey, put me in a 3-4 and let me blitz off the edge. I'll be an All-Pro every year. Let's go to Josh up on line one. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to talk a little bit about Marcus Mariota and the weapons he's had throughout his career. You know, I was a huge supporter of Marcus when we drafted him in the first 2 years. I was like, you know, once he stays healthy, he's going to put it all together. It's going to be great, kind of like Stafford, you know, hurt his first 2 years and then reels off like 4,000-yard seasons. But it hasn't happened. And I hear a lot of people say that the organization's done a bad job with surrounding Marcus with talent. And then some say, well, Marcus just hasn't been able to stay healthy and constantly produce. But the last 2 years, it just hasn't worked in the passing game. So, Blake, I just want to get your take on which is it? You know, what's holding this passing game back? Is it more that the talent around Marcus is letting him down, or is it more that he's not able to stay healthy, take care of himself, and constantly produce? So that's all I wanted to ask. Thanks.
You know, I will say it's not a not being able to take care of himself type situation. So he gets into where he's playing in multiple systems over the last 2 years. He played in Malarkey and Terry Rubisky's system last year, and obviously Matt LaFleur's system this year, which is a total different offense. And not only is Marcus learning that offense, but that offensive line, the receivers, the running backs, everyone involved is learning. And that takes people to get up to speed. Whether Marcus got up to speed quick or not, maybe the right guard and the left guard didn't, and that causes problems in pass protection. Totally different blocking scheme this year than they had last year. So there are some changes there that even though it's been 1 year and you're in week 17, which, you know, they played four preseason games and now 16 will be 16 more games as of Sunday. You know, it is tough to make that adjustment. And they're still playing with some young players. Corey Davis is in his second year. He's made strides, especially when they're playing against man coverage. So a lot of the personnel is playing well in stretches, in flashes like Corey, but also being without your best playmaker and your most consistent playmaker in Delanie Walker, which you wanted to go into this season with a Pro Bowl caliber type player that Marcus could rely on. This year, he doesn't have that. They mixed and matched with the running backs this year by going out and signing a Deion Lewis to be the starting running back and quickly replacing him with Derrick Henry, who has shown that he can be the number one. So it's a combination of both. Marcus has been injured, and unfortunately, it's been an arm injury, which has affected the passing game. But when he's been healthy and been able to be in the system and really you see it clicking, he's been effective in the pass and the run game, and it's opened up so many things for the offense. But you can see when those plays where he hit Taywan Taylor deep, he has the necessary arm strength. Marcus is a winner, and that's why he's going to play on Sunday. And when he plays, there's always a chance to win.
And Josh, to follow up on what Blake said, so he gets hurt in week one, misses week two. They didn't want to play him in week three, ends up playing in the final three quarters in Jacksonville where they run the guy. They didn't want to throw in a pass. Returns and never really got over that injury for a good month after that. Follow that up with a stretch where they play well against Dallas. They beat the Patriots. They go first half and they burn one against Indy. And then he gets hurt again. And it's been a recurring thing. As soon as he felt like he was getting back and hitting a stride, there was a setback. And there's another setback this past week where we're talking about another injury.
You know, and you look at some of the quarterbacks in this, Peyton Manning, when he had his nerve issue, he sat out an entire year. He didn't play. Andrew Luck had his shoulder injury. Now, whatever significance it was, he sat out an entire year. Marcus is playing, and he's playing through it. That shows, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying those other two aren't tough because they are, but he's playing through an injury that is affecting his ability to throw the ball, whether it's you see it on certain passes just because of the way he uses it. A right-hand quarterback is going to struggle with passes to the right because the ball is going to come off the bottom two fingers when he throws the ball, and the bottom two fingers are where he's having the issue. So you see a lot of issues with those passes, or when he has to cross his body rolling out to the left, and he has to cross his body and really grip the ball with those bottom two fingers to spin it.
And also, for all the offenses we discussed for the NFL that he's played in, he had, two or three coordinators in college, too, where he had to learn those offenses. He started with Chip Kelly. Kelly was quickly gone to the league, and he had some other systems he had to learn. So,
and you look at the success he's had, even when he had Ken Wisenhunt, okay, then to Malarkey, and then now to Matt LaFleur. He's had flashes of really good success in all three systems. there just needs to be some stability now. Let's not change the offense coordinator. Don't change the offense anymore. And then you have a Super Bowl type quarterback.
Blake Bedingfield with us, former Titan scout. Blake, the big news injury-wise, Marcus Mariota this week. What we already knew coming out of the Christmas holiday was Darrell Casey was placed on injured reserve. You're not going to replace him. There's no one with the cavalry coming in to save the day up front on the defensive line. But how do they get creative and find pressure up the middle, which is how they really, I wouldn't say confused Tom Brady, but they limited Tom Brady's effectiveness whenever they played here at Nissan Stadium and the Patriots. That's how they won. How do they do that with luck, given the fact that Casey, who is really good at making unscheduled plays, is not in the lineup?
You know, losing a Jarrell Casey is the equivalent of losing Delanie Walker. That's the playmaker on defense. He is an excellent player that plays a high number of snaps, too. If you look at his snaps per game, he's playing for defensive tackle, which is getting banged on every single play. He plays a high number of snaps, and he plays at a very high level. He's always had great energy. He always had very active, whether it's the run or pass. He's not a one-dimensional type player. To replace him with one person is impossible in this defense. Now, they're going to have to scheme and design the rushes, and they've done a very good job all year, whether it's playing off of a Jarrell Casey who can demand a double team at times. They're not going to have anybody on that defensive front that's going to demand the double team now, but they're still going to have to be active with Jayon Brown, active with Rashawn Evans, who I expect to play more in this game, whether he rushes from the outside with an injured Arakpo and a Sharif Finch. But he can do a lot of things from the inside as well. But Wesley Woodard is going to be very important in this game. Those three interior inside linebackers for the Titans are going to have to be active. They're going to have to blitz off the edge, too. They cannot leave Andrew back there and just free to sit back and pick the defense apart, because he will go deep on him. He will stretch the field with a T.Y. Hilton. But that's what I also expect when I brought up earlier in the segment that, you know, they're gonna hit the middle of the field with the tight ends. When he starts to see those inside linebackers blitzing or kind of delay blitz at times, he's going to pick them apart with a Jack Doyle and a Eric Ebron. That's where the Titans have that opportunity to fake those blitzes and sit back into coverage and possibly pick one off. But, you know, those are the type of the mix and the matches and the chess game that they're going to play. But the Titans are going to have to do what they've done all year, and that's blitz off the edge with a nickel and on the inside linebackers.
And stop the run. Right? I mean, stopping the run and forcing at least the Colts to give away what they have to do, which would be pass on third down. If you know that, then you can get creative with some of the blitz schemes that you can dial up. But if it's third down and 50-50, that's when luck can really go to work.
No question. And one of the things you do sometimes when you're playing the run, you're blitzing the quarterback. You're playing the run as you blitz to the quarterback. I remember Jim Washburn, the defensive line coach with the Titans for a number of years, he taught his defensive lineman to rush the passer on every play and play the run as you rush the passer.
How would you do that?
Well, they had the speed and athleticism on that front to be able to do that, whether it was a Javon Kearse or the intelligence and athletic ability of Kevin Carter, Josh Evans. There's a number of players. But
so Landry has that ability.
Landry could do that, but also those inside linebackers could do it. If you're delay blitzing with those inside linebackers, they have the speed and athleticism to recover and redirect their feet toward the running back. And, you know, Marlon Mack is a good running back, a solid running back, but he's not a special elite-type player. He gets his yardage based on what Andrew Luck can do in the passing game and what that offensive line is doing for him.
Has the offensive line been as dominant as what we saw in the middle of November?
I thought they were very good against the Titans in Week 11, and I don't think they've been as great against especially protecting the passer. There's been a couple of hands and hits on Andrew Luck, but they're still very good. They're still very good. And a lot of that is a credit to the quarterback getting rid of the ball and not taking those hits and sacks. And that's what elite quarterbacks do. They just don't take the hit.
Didn't even get they did. They got a hand on him in the first game.
Yeah, Brown Arakpo got around the left edge one time and got a hand on him, but that was it.
But not even a hit. No, I mean, that's how dominant of a performance they were up front. And he did take some time to throw some deep passes in that game. It wasn't all dink and dunk. He certainly did some of that, but he was allowed to set up shop and get after it downfield against Adoree. They have to find some pressure off the edge.
And you know, the game last week, the Colts, T.Y. Hilton had a very good game toward the end, but he was not as explosive and fast in that game. And I know he's had a little bit of an ankle and some hamstring, but there was one deep crossing route that he had, and he actually caught the ball. In normal situations, T.Y. turns that ball up and he scores. He actually went out of bounds. And when you saw him pushed out of bounds, he had a little bit of a hitch in his giddy-up with his legs, and he just is not as strong there right now. And if he comes in this game 80-90%, that's going to be in the Titans' favor because he was really tough in that first matchup.
615-737-1045, our number. Predators news, P.K. Subban and Victor Arvidsson have been activated from their injuries. Preds in town tonight hosting the Dallas Stars. So that's good news for a team that needs to get healthy and find some health. Maybe they've done that with Subban and Arvy. We'll certainly be watching that, and we'll be watching Vanderbilt and Baylor tonight. Vandy down in Houston taking on the Baylor Bears in the Texas Bowl at NRG Stadium. Blake, let's continue our discussion of Titans and Colts. And T.Y. Hilton, who didn't practice for the Colts, but he insists he's playing in what he's calling a Game 7, win and you're in, and advance. T.Y. Hilton won that one-on-one matchup. He won the speed battle against Adoree Jackson, which is hard to do. He did it routinely back in the middle of November. What worked, and how do you corral Hilton in this offense?
You know, T.Y. Hilton is a very smart player. Not only is he's a veteran now, and so he has that veteran savvy in his route running, but he kind of lulls defensive backs asleep. He looks like he's running one speed, and he has an extra gear. And that's what he does to young corners, whether it's Adoree or other corners in the league. So he's a very smart. He's learned to use not only his speed, but his brain and when he's running routes. And that's what you want to see out of a veteran and how he's grown in his game. He's a tough matchup, but you know, he was so tough in the first game that, Adoree struggled with him, but Adoree can match his speed one-on-one. Do the Titans now go and bracket him and put someone over the top and make one of the other receivers like a Chester Rogers or an Inman or one of those other receivers, a Zach Pascal who was here with the Titans, beat them? And that's what they really need to do, and take away that one threat and put someone else out there for Andrew Luck has to look in another direction.
Well, now Jack Doyle's on injured reserve, so that does allow you more options in coverage.
No question. And, you know, that's one of the.
You still have to worry about Ebron.
You still have to worry about Ebron, who is a big wide receiver in the way he's built and the way he runs. And so he can be a tough matchup as well. But I would rather take my chances with an Eric Ebron than I would a T.Y. Hilton in one-on-one coverage.
What is it about certain players? Ebron's the latest example, who does nothing when he's drafted in Detroit. And he has a really good quarterback, a solid quarterback in Matthew Stafford that can get him the football. Doesn't live up to the hype and the expectation of where he was drafted. Lands in Indy, and it has a breath of fresh air both for him, and it's a player that Indy desperately needed to pair with Jack Doyle and that offense that Frank Reich wanted to run. It's worked well. I'm sure there are fans in Detroit that are ripping the Lions for not getting this production out of him, but there are other examples across the league. You can point to certain guys here. You know, Zach Brown, a good example of a linebacker who's just flat-out lazy. When he was practicing for the Titans, but went to Washington and has done some nice things. What is it about just a change of scenery that can get the most out of a player? And maybe he'll never actually live up to full expectation, but he's a matchup you have to worry about now in a Colts uniform, and he wasn't when he was with the Lions.
No question. And, you know, Eric Ebron is a player that now the pressure's off. He's no longer the first-round draft choice. He is a free agent player.
Too.
And so the expectation, even though he had a very high-level quarterback in Matthew Stafford in Detroit, he's got an elite-level franchise quarterback in Andrew Luck. And when I talk about franchise, I'm talking about making players around you better. Andrew Luck does it with very little personnel around him. But the Colts have done a very good job of using Eric in a situation, whether it's red zone offense, short yardage offense, but he can use his size and athleticism, and they do a great job of matching up with him. Get him on a small linebacker, get him on a safety. If they get an opportunity with a corner, I mean, he's going to win those matchups. Eric, coming out of North Carolina, was a defensive end slash tight end. Excellent defensive end his freshman year in college that they moved to a tight end position. He was one of those athletes when he comes in, you weren't sure what you wanted to do with him, but he had the ability to play both in the league, and then he decided on tight end, which is a little bit more of a thinking man's game, and that's where Eric in his first 2 years struggled with the Lions, is really picking up those pro-style offenses, but he didn't have that opportunity to sit and watch because he was a first-round draft choice. He was expected to come in and hit the ground running. And with the Colts, he's now a veteran player. He's got an opportunity with an elite-level quarterback.
Is he one of those basketball players?
He is. He wasn't in North Carolina, but he was an excellent athlete that could have done so many different things.
Can you, as a scout, can you watch a basketball player and say, yes, he can play tight end?
You know,
what do you need to – How do you find the basketball players that can translate to the gridiron?
You know, I think when you look at a Tony Gonzalez, that was easy. You saw the athleticism. You saw the size. You saw the hands. I think with Antonio Gates, it's a little bit different. So, you know, there have been those basketball players that have transitioned to football. I remember watching a player with the Titans play basketball, and I thought he was a outstanding basketball player until I saw him dribble. Well, Javon Kearse. Javon Kearse could make any dunk he wanted to do, but as soon as the ball hit the ground, I realized he couldn't play basketball because he can't dribble and beat anybody. But he could dunk, and he could do so many wonderful things from his athleticism.
His hands were too big for the ball.
His hands were too big for the ball. But, you know, there are certain traits that translate, yeah. And playing power forward or a small forward position in basketball can do that. But, you know, I've said for years that I thought the NFL game, baseball in particular, have lost out on some really great athletes because of basketball, whether it's a point guard in basketball. You know, you get a lot of point guards that play small level college, could be a corner or a slot receiver in the NFL or a center fielder and a shortstop in baseball. There's some really good athletes out there that need to play multiple sports.
How much time in your 19 years with the Titans as a scout did you spend scouting kickers, punters, kickers in general?
You know, you have
you ever
to
make a trip for that?
Yeah, you have to do it with every team, and it's probably the most frustrating for a scout for a number of reasons. First of all, kickers decide when they want to practice, and so you've got to be there when they decide they want to practice or when they want to kick. And a lot of times you're looking for them, and they're in the building playing with the long snapper or the punter, and you're waiting for him to come out and do his thing. But it's very difficult because most of the time when you're watching them perform outside of a game setting, they're just kicking the ball with no pressure. And I remember talking to Craig Hendrick, the Titans punter, for a long time, and we were sitting on the side watching a practice one day, and we were discussing college kickers because later in his career he started to work with some college kickers and helping them transition to the NFL. He said the biggest struggle for punters and kickers is the K-ball, the NFL K-ball. If you look at the college football, it's kind of a balloon compared to the NFL ball. The NFL ball is real hard, and now with the K-ball, it's coming right out of the box. It's a lot tougher to kick, and that's the transition is very tough. Not only are the hash marks different, which you would think would make it easier, but the ball is very difficult.
Goalposts. So,
yeah, and it's tough, and you know when you get into the NFL and the precision of accuracy is so important, there is some development that's needed. And, you know, we've had multiple kickers with the Titans for years, whether it was Rob Baronis, who bounced around to six different training camps and finally stuck with the Titans, that finally figured it out as they got older.
Found a rhythm.
And a lot of times it's whether it's training and developing your body to perform over a long period of time or develop your mind and to develop in a pressure situation.
Are you concerned with suck up at all right now?
You know, I am because a little bit. I think Ryan has an outstanding leg strength. He can make any kick on the field. There's no question about it. And when he's on, when he's confident, there's not a kick he can't make. And when you see him approach the ball, you can see a little bit of that confidence at times. And what you're seeing now is some misses. And I know Ryan from being around him, he's a confidence type kicker. There are some kickers like I brought up Rob Baronis, who didn't necessarily need that confidence. He was a type of person that wanted that limelight, and I'm not saying Ryan doesn't, because Ryan's made some big kicks when the game is on the line.
And he works hard at that craft.
He is an unbelievable worker.
Yes.
And really, those three together, Bo Brinkley, Ryan Succop, and Brett Kern, are really outstanding workers for that position. And they may sit in the building at time when the game's on the line, but they're always together, and they put a lot of time in. Now, Ryan does an unbelievable job of his physical fitness too. I mean, he is always stretching, always working out. So there's very few among those three that put in as much time as they do. But I am concerned at time when I start to see those extra points being missed or easier type field goals. And when I'm talking about easier, I'm talking about 45 and in.
I think one of the most eye-opening experiences for me, aside from just the sheer size and speed of the athleticism of players on the sideline for me when I got down there, was how much time and the precise detail that goes into the discussions for the kicking game. They are constantly, and when I say constantly, Brett Kern and Ryan Succop don't stop talking about kicking between the first quarter and the fourth quarter. They don't stop. They're constantly discussing, okay, here's where the ball on this hash, we're going to put the ball here. We're going to slightly turn it to the left, and we need to push it to the right. I mean, down to the inch mark of where they want to kick that football. There's a constant discussion throughout the game, and when I see a kick just off to the left, off to the right, they immediately come off to the sideline, and they're getting just the minute detail squared away.
Well, and part of that is Brett Kern is a holder, too. So there is that added.
And the snap.
I think that's in Bo with the snap, but I think the holder is one of the most difficult jobs in football. Not only do you have to get the snap in a tough position, whether it's weather or what have you, but you have to get the laces around, get it down exactly the way the kicker wants it, and they have to have that confidence and that timing that they need. And that is a tough, it looks so easy at times on TV, but it's very difficult to watch and watch how precise, like you mentioned, they are.
I think, Blake, if the Titans are successful and they win this game on Sunday, if they want to be in the mix in the fourth quarter, they cannot have a mistake on special teams. And a mistake being a missed kick, missed extra point, a bad decision to bring a football out and flip field position. Kern needs to continue to be great, and he has been excellent on punting, even in bad weather situations. They cannot have the slightest misstep in that area. That needs to be on. That's the one side of the football they can't concern themselves with. You just need to be able to put a check mark in the box for special teams.
I agree, and you know that's why Brett Kern's going to the Pro Bowl, for what he's done this year in the punting game and pinning the offenses back, especially what he did last week versus the Redskins. I mean, he was really the MVP of that game. I mean, he kept the offense, made them drive long distances to have success, and that's, you talk about Brett's work ethic, and that's why he's in the Pro Bowl, and that's why Ryan Succop is on that cusp of being a Pro Bowl player, and Bo Brinkley should be, because Bo does a lot. Not only is he a very good snapper, but he's an outstanding cover player. He's a really good athlete and can cover down the field with his speed and actually be an asset on coverage teams.